Welcome to the Calgary Sessions. This is episode number 68. I'm your host, Jeff Humphreys. Today's guest, this one's brought to, he got brought into my world from Emma, mm-hmm. who cuts and edits this great podcast.
Emma.
So yeah, shout out to Emma. This is going to be a fun conversation. I say it over and over. Honestly, like every guest I have, I'm like, fuck, this is going to be awesome. But yours is going to be really cool because I know your story from afar. Cool. Just kind of watching it and like seeing the brand popping up for 6-7 years now, whatever it's been. So go ahead, name and who you are.
Yeah, my name is Connor Curran. I'm the chief laundry folder of Local Laundry. We're Canada's most caring clothing company. Most people would recognize us from the YYC design that you see around Calgary.
That's like the YYC see, with yeah. the like lines going through it.
Yeah. What I want to know is you said you know some of my story. I wanted to hear what you've heard of my story, yeah. and then I can dive.
Oh yeah,
in.
Totally.
What have you heard?
Well, I honestly didn't quite understand what you were really up to.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was just strictly like a t-shirt swag company. Yeah. You know, like very not simple, but I thought it was kind of focused around that. But I think it seems like there's a lot more layers to it, and I think your company's very. You're not afraid to explain your why.
Yeah, that's a big one for
us. That's very different. A lot of companies haven't figured out, you know, why it's important to explain your why.
Yeah.
You guys seem to have really got that dialed.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
Yeah, so I think it's, and even just talking off camera, your decision of how you operate and how you're building, like it's very different.
Yeah.
And so that's what I noticed from the outside. You know, once I dig into what you're up to, I feel like it's a different business.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, man, we're pretty intentional. And deliberate with a lot of decisions we make within the business.
And is that just instinct or what is that? Like you're a, you know, I don't know what your experience was before this, but.
It's a couple of things. A big part of my inspiration was my parents. My parents, they moved here from Ireland, if you couldn't tell, from ginger beard.
Mm-hmm.
They both left school at 15, 16. They moved here with no money, worked 3 jobs, and they became entrepreneurs themselves.
Mm.
And so I was always really inspired by them. And I just, since I was like 8 years old, I was always like asking them questions about this, like just soaking up as much knowledge from them, you know, dad on the business side of things and the operations and mom on like, you know, the more people side of things and personality and that kind of thing.
Mm.
And so I always knew I wanted to start a business. I never thought I was smart enough to start a business because I just saw my parents like they're so smart. I could never be as smart as them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I finally had the courage to just give it a try, I had all this knowledge and information. I knew exactly how I wanted to build it, right? I wanted to do something completely different, completely unique, something that was fun, that I was proud of, you know, that I knew my parents would be proud of and I could just share with others.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. And that's why I think this story is going to be rad to hear.
Oh,
and I don't know how often you've told it. You've been on a shit ton of podcasts, I'm sure. And like, your story's been around.
Yeah.
But this would be really, really cool. I don't know if you've seen any of these, but you know, the gist of the show is I like the guests to go back and you just started to.
Yeah.
Go back to a time when you start remembering things, you know, what inspired you, how you grew up, where you grew up. And then we're going to weave our way down this path of where you are today.
Oh, perfect.
And then by the end of it, I think I'll have a very clear picture of, you know, why you operate the way you do.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll be really cool. So, yeah, man, go back as far as you want to go.
Totally. First of all, I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity because most people don't allow for that. And most people just want to hear like, hey, how'd you get started?
Why is that? Like, so, because people, now that you got me going, I agree.
Right.
This is an interesting environment to actually share your story.
Yeah.
In a manner that's like not narcissistic.
Yeah.
You know, it's very conversational. It's very like, you know, there's no script. There's no nothing. It's just this dead chat.
Yeah.
Do you think people just like to see highlights of people's lives? And that's kind of like, you know, if you're on different, you know, if you read an article about you guys, it's highlights, right?
Yeah.
It's these moments in time. When did you open? When did you hit $1 million? When, like, it's just these like moments in time, and you as a person, me as a person, those are just like small little moments that they're just things.
Yeah.
It actually isn't that, there's no foundation to, you know, why things are happening, which I think.
I think that's so well put. I think it's definitely highlights and no fault to anyone else, but you need highlights because we live in a constant attention driven, you know, something always else grabbing our attention. So we got to just see the highlights. And they're like, is that worth our time to dive into? Yes, no, great.
Yeah.
But to kind of open it up and kind of get the understanding of how and why we operate, and it's fun. And I like doing it. It's you know, I could talk about me all day,
which is great though.
It is great because I love having platforms like this, because otherwise, just in every day, like if we were just to meet on the street for coffee, I wouldn't want to bore you with like, let me take you back to when I was 14.
Totally. But I think, you know, that's kind of the magic of this show.
Yeah.
Because these opportunities are very unique.
Right.
So for some Yahoo to ask you, like, take it back to when you were 13, 14, 10.
Yeah.
It's kind of like,
Yeah. It's a really great technique. And it's, it opens up a lot more interesting dialogues, especially someone who's listening. Maybe they've heard me on another show or something.
Yeah.
You tend to repeat the same things.
Yeah.
But yeah. I've heard this guy talk 1,000 times or whatever. This is something different.
Yeah. We're going to fuck with them here.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So go ahead, man. Take it back.
So I told you a little bit about, like my parents moved here and,
what'd they start?
They started a pub.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. You probably know it. It's the James Joyce Irish Pub on 8th Ave.
No way, dude.
Yeah.
What year is this?
They started in 97.
So, came over?
They came over in 79.
Okay.
You know, worked a bunch of jobs. My dad, he was, he started fixing beer lines and cash registers, you know, and then worked his way up to the CEO of a brewery in Red Deer.
Kim.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, I don't remember, it's called Drummond Beer. So we built that up, and then he sold that off to Labatt's, moved here to Calgary. And it was always, he's been working in pubs since he was 14. So it was always his dream to open a pub here in Calgary.
Yep.
And it was one of the first Irish pubs in Calgary. So him and my mom started it. And so we grew up in that place. It's like fifth sibling, you know, fifth child of the family. We, it was my first job in the dish pit, washing dishes.
Young, 12, 13, 14.
Well, it was a bar, so we couldn't work there until we were about, 18, right? So.
Noted.
So we, started in the dish pit.
Yep.
Every summer going through school, bartended. My sisters all, served. My brother-in-law still is the head chef there. My mom works there. Irish cousins coming over from back home. They'd work there. Real family affair.
No kidding.
Yeah. So, but I always thought that, I just adored my parents. I thought they were so smart, so clever. I was like, there's no way I can own my own business. Mm-hmm. It just was out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working at the bar and I was like, well, what else am I going to do? And all the people that would come in at lunch in their fancy suits and they would have all these drinks at lunch downtown Calgary and then they'd go golfing and take all their clients for lunch. I was like, what do these guys do? I want to do what they do. And it's like,
did you, when your family's in the restaurant bar industry, usually it's like a generational thing, right? It's like, it just keeps on going.
Yeah.
When you're working there, you started off in the dish pit, bartender, I don't know if you ran the thing eventually, whatever, but
no.
Any aspiration to stay in the restaurant bar business?
None.
Why? So, and you say your parents are really smart. You're like, I don't think I'm that smart. So they own this business. You're like, no way am I ever doing this.
No, it's not my passion. They were really passionate. My mom's really passionate about food. My dad's really passionate about whiskey and, spirits and beer and that kind of thing. Just wasn't my passion. So I couldn't deal with all the headaches and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, and maybe this is a bit the vanity of me, but I wanted to create something that was completely my own.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to stand on my own two feet. I wanted to be successful, not because my parents were successful. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be like, oh, that Connor guy, he's successful, but it's because his mommy and daddy gave him a pub.
Yeah, it's like silver spoon.
Yeah.
Mom and dad own a bar, and he's just going to like run the bar and take it over eventually.
Yeah, and not that there's anything wrong with that. I know lots of, second, third generation family-run businesses. They're fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just wanted something my own that I could call my own. No one else. My favorite part about being a business owner is no one tells me what to do. I hate being told what to do.
Always?
Always.
So it's like, go back to school.
Always.
Like school and sport. Did you
I did sports, yeah.
And like same kind of vibe? Or
not
like,
so much with sports. Sports.
Like get in line and do your thing?
Yeah, that was fine. With school, I had a real problem with authority.
This is going to be awesome. So when did you figure out that was a problem?
Oh, man. Like consciously? I don't know. Probably not till after. I didn't realize consciously until I got my first real job outside of working with my parents. But I got three sisters at home, so they're always bossing me around. I hate being bossed around. I hate being told what to do. I can't even go to a fitness class
and have somebody yell at you.
Yeah. No, thanks. Mm-hmm. Like I work out alone. like team sports, it was fun. Yep. It just because it was more just buddies hanging around and yep. you know, having fun, whatever. I played a lot of basketball, but yeah, I like to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. So, but I saw all these guys coming in for lunch and I was like, they look like they're really successful, know what they're doing. I'd love to do what they do. I'm like, what do you guys do for work? They're like, oh, we're in oil and gas. Oh, great. So I'm like, I'm going to go do that. So in time for university, I was like, I'm going to go into business. I'm going to go to business school.
Yep.
It's like, great. All throughout business school, they're like, what are you going to do after university? I'm like, going to go into oil and gas. And they're like, oh, fantastic. What are you going to do in oil and gas? I'm like, I don't know, business stuff.
Just oil and gas, right?
Just oil and gas, right? I'll be the guy going to lunch, drinking.
Suit it up.
Yeah, suit it up. I'll do whatever, business stuff. All 4 years of university. That was my thing. When it came time to like pick my major, as like finance, like, nah, that's boring. Accounting, nah, that's boring. I don't know. Leadership management, like, yeah, that's good. I'll do that. I'll be in charge. I'll just tell people what to do in oil and gas business. And so I graduate. And I couldn't get a job anywhere. Like I applied everywhere. That was the first ego, real gut check.
And what were you looking for? Like sales gigs or just like
anything?
Something, anybody that had oil and gas on the door?
Yeah.
You're like, I can go, I can, yeah. I can do this.
And I think that was my problem because it was like, look, I'm an accounting major. I want to work on the accounting team or a marketing major, yep. you know. But I was just like one oil and gas job, please.
Are you working through university?
At my parents' bar, like, only in the summertime.
But the bar is like this constant theme from an early age,
yeah.
kind of all the way through university. It was just kind of like that place where
yeah,
it was like home base for everything.
It was like I said, I got three sisters, there's four kids. It was like the fifth kid. It was like the fourth sibling, mm. you know. It was always kind of home base. I always knew I could go home, get a job, you know.
Yep.
I got all my friends' jobs. It was
yep.
it was a fun place to work,
yep.
you know. Plus when you're the boss's kid, like you can, you know, work, get free meals, you can do whatever you want. You
can bend it.
You can bend it, right? So I did a lot more yakking on the bar, you know, talking than...
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, and off camera, I kind of told you that I have like a long restaurant bar background. Whoa. Worked in nightclubs for a long time.
Yeah.
And I've had a few characters from this nightclub on the show. And a couple of them talked about just what we learn in the service industry.
Mm.
And whether it's like, you know... All of a sudden you figure out you got the gift of gab or that you know how to hold a conversation or you know how to read a room, you know, look for small details, you know why to put a sign at the front door facing this way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
how to control a room.
Yeah.
How to persuade a room. Yeah.
Do you, when you're in it, did you know all these things you were learning? And do you ever spend time looking back and being like, holy fuck, there's a lot of things I did back then that kind of set me up to where I am right now.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you're 18 talking to like CEOs and high, you know, VPs of oil and gas companies, powerful people. It's really intimidating, right? And you know, don't want to mess up their drink order and this, that. It builds a lot of confidence. It's sink or swim, really. You know, you know what it's like. Bar's full on. It's jam packed. Like it's sink or swim.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. You know, mm-hmm. getting into the flow. Yeah, crazy night. It was hard work. I still have nightmares of like the little chip machine going.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, man. Yeah, I hate that thing. But I knew it was, I enjoyed it for the time because I knew it was only going to be temporary.
Yep.
I never wanted to work there long term.
Yep.
It wasn't going to be my thing. I had mm-hmm. to go find my thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got one job. It was, I worked at an oil and gas engineering firm. I talked to the boss. My dad set me up with one of his buddies who worked there, and he was like...
And that's how you got the job.
That's how I got the job. Yeah. Pure nepotism.
but it's the way the world works.
Totally.
You know, like...
I mean, I tried to go out and get a job. I couldn't get one. Then I was just like, Dad, you got to know someone who can get a job. All my buddies got jobs. I got to go find one. So I get this job with this... And he was this big Texan oil guy. And he comes in, he's like, love your dad, Connor. We'll be able to find you something here, no problem. And he gave me three options. He's like, do you want to do this, this, or this? One, I think, was like controls. One was contracts. And the other one, I think, was like recruiting or something. And I was like, well, which one would you do? He's like, you want to go in contracts? They make the most money. And I'm like, okay.
Speak my language.
Yeah, I was like, I'll do that. So I was a subcontract specialist.
Oh, that sounds horrible, dude.
Yeah. And I realized, like, because I came from, like, university. I was senior class president, vice president of my residence. Like,
oh, no
I
way.
Did an exchange. I did a volunteer trips. Like, I was I was an active student, honors degree. I was all in my university experience.
And you, and that was a conscious decision, like to do all of those things. You didn't want to be just this like person in the shadows.
No,
you had it in you to like step up and do your thing.
I don't know why, because you definitely just float by. I just had a drive, just like, I want to do stuff. I want to get going. I want to sink my teeth into stuff. Hmm. Like, let me at it, you know?
Always like that? Like youngsters?
No, young, I was pretty shy. I was very quiet. Hmm. I think it was only around kind of maybe, it's about junior high that I started to take on opportunities as they came. Hmm. And I just saw like, I don't know, I just saw cool opportunities come up. I'm like, I can do that.
Yep.
I don't know how to do that, but I can do that.
Be ready.
I think it was, I went to a public school for elementary. Then I went to a private school for a junior high.
Okay.
It was a small private school. And the nice thing about that was that it allowed you to partake in anything. You want to be on the soccer team? Great. We need bodies for the soccer team. Yeah. You want to go do debate? Sure. You know, you want to do anything? So I just, I knew I could try anything. So when it came to high school, I went back to a public high school. And then, you know, university, it was like, well, I can do that. I'm not afraid to try. Hmm. What's the harm? Hmm. You know, I might not be good at it, but I can try. I can do it.
Interesting.
And yeah. Yeah.
Because not a lot of people are like me. That would be the most uncomfortable situation. Me in school, not a thing.
Yeah.
Like dropped out three times, like just not a thing. And there's no way I would have ever said like, I can try it.
See, here's the thing. I'm not an academic. I did well in school, but I'm not an academic. The reason I did well is because I knew how to charm the teachers. Not charm them, but I knew how to relate and talk to the teachers, you know? But like, you know, listen, like I don't understand this concept. Like, how can I do it? Mm. What can I do to get ahead? Like, I'm just not getting it, you know? Yep. So I wasn't an academic. I hate studying. I hated doing homework. Mm. But I'll participate in the class. I'll put my hand up. I'll look like the dumb who doesn't know the answer, but I'll give it a shot. Like, I have no shame. I have no shame. I'm not afraid to do anything because I have no shame. I don't care.
But still, you pulled it off. Like, you got some...
You know, I got an honors degree and then I'll get to... I have an MBA as well. And again, like, not an academic.
Isn't that weird to say, though? You know, there's going to be some folk listening like, this guy's full of shit. Like, you know, to go down that path, that's a lot of school, right? And it takes a lot of effort and skill to pull that off, so.
Yeah, I just wanted it. I wanted to go to a good school. I wanted to get an honors degree. It was so much work to do an honors degree and for like little reward other than just to say you have an honors degree. But I was like, no, I want that prestige. I want to show the hard work, you know, like I want to prove that even though I'm not academic, like I'm not the smartest, you know, tool in the tool shed.
Yep.
I can do this.
Did you think you were going to use that? Like when you're cruising around with these oil and gas companies, you're like, I got not like,
oh yeah.
You thought that was going to be your calling card?
Oh, like, big time. This I was guy's like, got it. That was a big ego check. So I was like, man, they're going to be lining up. Like, I'm going to be interviewing all these companies. Everyone, who's not going to want me? Honors degree, vice, senior class president. You know. Like,
and.
Yeah, and. Mm-hmm. And nobody wanted
it. Do you ever? It's awesome. And then how you got the job is like connections, right? It's relationships. Yeah. It's the way the world works.
Yeah.
Do you ever catch yourself thinking about that? Like, would you change anything?
Not a thing.
Yeah.
Not a thing. If the only thing I would have changed... the only thing I was too afraid to try was start a business. Mm. I would have started a business earlier.
Younger.
Younger. To me, I knew I could try anything, but the idea of a business was the one thing that I was like, oh, I can never figure that out.
So you just like, you're humble enough to be like, yeah, that might be a reach.
Yeah. I think I was more comfortable because these were all systems. I was good at fitting into these systems, the school system, the university system. You know, I could play the system. I knew how to work the system. Business just seemed like there was no system at all. It was just sort of out there and there's no guardrails, no safety nets, no nothing.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't know anything about taxes or, you know, all that good stuff. Yeah. So I could never just figure
no
it out.
Go.
Yeah. So
go back to that first job, contracts guy.
Oh my God.
Did you have shitty suits too? Were you like rocking bad suits? Did you go buy nice ones?
Oh no.
Or was
no,
it
no.
khakis and shitty collars?
Yeah. So I showed up like first couple of days rocking the suit. Like I went suit shopping with my mom, you know, prior to, and I get there and everyone's in dress pants and just like some wrinkly old the same old dress shirt they've been wearing for the last 20 years. Yeah. They're like, what are you doing wearing a suit? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I wanted to be that business guy.
Yeah.
This was not it, you know? And it was like the most soul sucking environment ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was like, here's your cubicle, sit down, put your head down, do work. And then in 40 years time, you can be like Bob over there. And the great thing about Bob, that guy gets 3 weeks vacation a year. You can build your way up to that. And Bob is divorced. He's overweight. He smokes a pack a day. He's depressed. Anything. And I'm like, I don't want to be like Bob.
What is happening?
And so I went from like this university experience with like everyone's fun and we're full of opportunity and optimism into this like this gray beige office environment where you just have all these people who don't want to be there. They're just there for a paycheck. There's no passion. There's no purpose. You know, there's no why, right? And you're just surrounded by these people, and it was so depressing. And I think that was like, I still have nightmares where I'm back at that job. And I think I was depressed because it was like, I would so look forward to Fridays, and Friday by 5 o'clock, if I didn't have a beer in my hand, I was a miserable person. I just had to go get as drunk as I could on Friday, do something wild and crazy Saturday, go party Saturday night, be hungover Sunday, and then back to work depressed Monday.
The cycle.
Every week.
How long did it last?
2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Wow. With the hopes that it might change?
Hopes that it might change, but then, so I was just like, is this it? And everyone I talked to was like, yeah, man, that's, you get a job, that's how this works. You get a job, you work your way up, get a wife, kids, and then 40 years you retire. I'm like, this can't be it, man. There's got to be something else.
And as you're, these 2 years, like that's not enjoyable. There
wasn't a single thing that I enjoyed.
And meanwhile, your parents are doing their thing.
Yeah.
And still like you're still seeing that, right?
Yeah.
It's still in your world. You see them doing something cool. They're doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Are you connecting dots yet? Are you like,
No,
okay.
Not yet.
Okay.
Cause I really thought like, never going to take over the pub. I didn't want to take over the pub. I can never start my own business. I guess I just got to figure out this job thing and make the best of it, I guess. You know, it looks pretty great. I mean, I get every second Friday off. I can go on these guys' trips and drink and vacation once or twice a year. Like, I guess I can settle for that.
Yep.
But then, thank goodness, my world got rocked one day because my boss's boss came in. And he's like, Connor, can I have a chat with you? I'm like, the day's here, boys. Moving on up. I was like, yes, absolutely. Oh, hang on, Bill. Let me go grab my notebook so I can take notes. I'm back and sit in the meeting with my notebook. And I'm like, yeah, what do you want to chat about? Super excited. You never come over
here. You're like, this is opportunity.
Yeah, I'm ready. Right? And he's like, listen, man, we're letting some people go today. Like, we got to do some layoffs. Not you, it's just the economy and everything. We got to lay you off. And I'm like, can't laid off? And it just rocked my world. It just rocked because I thought I was like, I almost kind of accepted that this was going to be my life.
Yep.
And then I was like, well, shoots, now what?
Mm-hmm. What is it? I've been laid off once. Mm-hmm. I was working for Critical Mass.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And this is like early 2000s and the bottom kind of fell out and you're being told one thing, you're kind of in this spot, you're like, oh yeah, this can be my thing, I can go this way, and then you get laid off. And it's like a shot of your ego.
It's a gut punch,
It's like all of it.
It's embarrassing.
There's a lot going on,
People are like, hey, how's it going, how's that job? And he's like, I got laid off.
Yeah.
It
hurts.
It was one of the worst feelings I ever experienced.
Yep.
I hated it. All my friends, they'd never been laid off, so like I told them that Friday, they all started laughing at me. Mm-hmm. They're like, what an idiot. Mm-hmm. Who gets laid off? Mm-hmm. What was wrong with you?
And I'm fucking like, friends,
I
right?
Know, man. I know. I know. And then, over time, they all went through it. Yeah. We just didn't get it.
Yeah.
23, 24.
And that first time is, I was almost the exact same age.
It's the
worst. It's like a shot at everything.
Yeah. I like called my parents. I'm like, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. Like, what, does this make me less of a man?
Yep.
Where
do I put on my resume?
Yeah. Yeah. Is this going to be a blemish on my resume? Mm-hmm. Am I going to be able to get another job? Mm-hmm. But I remember the guy beside me, he was like a guy in his 50s with a wife and kid. And as much as my world had been rocked, I was still living at home.
Yep.
No debt,
yep.
No wife, no kids, no mortgage. His whole life was real upside down.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because like there goes his mortgage payments. He just bought a new car.
Yeah.
Like his son needed medical stuff. So like everything in his life was real in jeopardy.
Yeah.
And I looked at him and I was like, I never want to be in that position. I never want to be in that position again where I'm solely reliant on this job. And at any given time, my boss's boss can come in and just say, thanks, but we don't need you anymore.
Yep.
I was like, I'm never going to allow anyone to have that much control over my life or my family's life ever again.
When did you, was that a quick realization? You know, did it take you a couple of weeks to kind of get to shake it off?
Or yeah.
Because that's, like I said, I've said it three times now, but it's like a punch.
It is.
At a young age.
Yeah.
So.
And a lot of people are going through it right now with tech and everything,
yep.
You know? So it happens a lot more often than you think.
And then to come to that realization, like, I don't want, and dude, I feel you're like taking words out of my mouth. Cause that happened to me too. And different times in my life, I'm like, nobody's going to have that kind of control over me ever again.
Yeah.
Once you realize that, what starts happening? Like, do you stop applying for random jobs? Do you like,
the first thing was like, you know what? I need to get out of here. So I need a change of pace. It's change of scenery. I need to go do something.
Yep.
So I was always kind of planning on going to this. I always wanted to do my master's. I wanted to do an MBA.
Why?
To me, it was just like my parents really valued education. Like my dad would have loved the opportunity to get an MBA, but you know, just was never in his cards. And I always just thought that I got a degree, got an honors degree, but it's not enough. I want to go get a master's. I want to separate myself even more.
Yep.
Again, it's probably just an ego thing because I talked to like MBAs don't mean diddly squat. They're just three extra letters behind your name.
Yep.
And again, I thought it would look great
mm-hmm.
on a resume.
Yep.
So I thought like, how can I make myself unlayoffable? I'll go get an MBA,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I can get in the job and
yep.
whatever. So.
So you're still on it. You're still like, I'm gonna one up everybody else.
Yeah.
So I'm more employable.
Exactly.
And I can get in a different shade of beige.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
It hadn't quite clicked yet.
Yeah.
It hadn't quite clicked. So I was just like, I'm gonna go do something. I'm gonna go do an MBA.
Yep.
I gotta be different. I don't wanna go to UFC.
Mm-hmm.
75 grand, 2 years.
Yep.
I remember to get into the MBA program, most MBA programs, you got to write a GMAT, right? It's just a standardized test, like the MCATs. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like the MCATs or SATs. It's a standardized test.
Okay, yeah.
You get a score, and that's how when you apply to these MBA schools,
yep.
they look at your resume, your yep. undergrad grades, and also this GMAT test score. I bought the book. I sat down and went to the library downtown. I sat down for about 15 minutes, got through one page of this book. And I said before, I hate studying. I hate homework. And I'm like, nope, not doing this. This is stupid. So then I went back on the old Google machine and Googled MBA schools where you don't need a GMAT.
Word for word.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I found one.
Is this the one?
No.
Okay.
I found a bunch in Europe. A lot of Europeans, the GMAT is a very North American standardized test thing. In Europe, most schools for master program, you don't need a GMAT.
Okay.
So my parents, because they're from Ireland, I have dual citizenship. So I'm technically a European citizen as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I found a school because my parents, they paid for my undergrad. I was very fortunate, but I didn't even want to, they probably would have paid for my master's, but I didn't even want to ask them. I wanted to stand on my own 2 feet. I wanted to do my own thing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pay for an MBA. So I found a school in Sweden that was free for European citizens. It was a 1 year program and it didn't require a GMAT score.
Dude, it's like the perfect storm.
It was the perfect storm. It was this small town.
The Google.
Like, yeah, Northern Sweden. And I somehow convinced my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time. I'm like, hey, listen, like I got laid off. I'm going to go to Sweden for a year. Do you want to come with me? And she'd never been anywhere outside of Canada. She'd never been to Europe, and God bless her. She was like, yeah, I'll come to Sweden. And so one day, next thing I know, we're just packing our bags. We're on a plane. They were in the middle of nowhere, like Sweden, and I'm about to go to this school.
Had you traveled much before this?
Yeah. I've been, I, I do like to travel. Okay. So I backpacked Europe when I was 18.
Gotcha.
I did an exchange to France in my third year at university. Mm. My mom and I are great travel buddies. We've been to like Israel together and Australia together. And
cool.
We go to Ireland every year, you know, to visit family.
Awesome.
So I was fairly well traveled, yep, and I was confident traveling.
Yep.
My wife never traveled anywhere, so mm-hmm, she relied solely on me. Mm-hmm. But then I kept having these nightmares. I'd show up at this Swedish school and they would either be like, oh yeah, you got to pay like $100,000. Or like they would start the first day and it was all in Swedish. Mm-hmm. And so I kept checking almost every day. I'm like, so you're sure it's free? I'm like, yes, Mr. Kern, it's free. And I'm like, are you sure it's in English? So they're like, yes, Mr. Kern, it's all in English.
It's so good.
Yeah. So
a year there.
Cause I also do one of these programs that are like 2 years. You gotta, yep, pay. I'm like, I don't got time for 2 years.
Yep.
I want to get this done. Mm-hmm. I'll just do whatever I can to get these three letters,
yep,
and then I'll get back in the game.
Yep. Suit it up, back in the game.
Right. Right. So, you know, luckily I was fortunate. I saved a good chunk of money. Like I lived at home the whole time I worked.
Yep.
Saved up enough money and brought my wife out, and she was great. Great to travel. And then it was there that I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to do things differently with this degree. I'm actually, instead of the classic like undergrad where you get an essay or a project and you just pick the easiest topic that you could find just, mm-hmm, to pass and,
yep,
not care. I was like, I'm going to use this MBA time to really kind of like discover what it is I want to do and start to apply these. Like, I know I like business. Mm. I know I like business. So I'm going to start to see if I can apply these concepts to stuff that interests me. And I was like, I bet I could start a business. I was like, I want to see if I can start a business. Because if I can start my own business, then I can be like my mom and dad. Then no one can tell me what to do. If I ever get laid off, it'll be my own fault. I'll see it coming, mm-hmm, right? I won't be surprised. So I was like, I wonder if I could start a business. And again, I didn't want to be like mom and dad. I didn't want to be that kid who was successful because of mom and dad. So yeah. I wanted to start a business for as cheap as possible. I didn't want to go to mom and dad, like, got this great business idea, but I need 10 grand or 100 grand. Mm-hmm. I was like, I want to stand on my own two legs. I want to do my own thing. Mm-hmm. So I had an idea for a clothing company. And I was like, you know, I'm from Calgary and I'm here living in Sweden. Yeah, I'm very proud of Calgary. I bet there's lots of other people that are proud from Calgary, but all there was is like I heart Calgary or
Alberta.
Yeah, yeah. Berta Strong. Yeah. Or RCMP moose cartoon, mm-hmm, you know,
some beavers.
And I was like, there's more to Calgary. Like just Calgary is more than just being a Flames fan. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's gotta be something there. So, I just Google searched how to make a t-shirt company and then watch a YouTube video. And like $50 later, I had my own online clothing company utilizing drop shipping. I was living in Sweden. The shirts were getting made in LA and shipped to Calgary. Hmm. So it was like kind of the perfect storm, like the perfect time where technology was just come out that you could operate a business, drop ship, never have to touch a t-shirt, yep, don't have to do printing, don't have to buy a bunch of inventory.
Yep.
It's all on demand. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of this perfect storm in this world that I discovered. And then it became like a drug.
So where does t-shirts, fashion, like where does that interest even come from? You know, of all the ideas, you're sitting in Sweden coming up with like the thing.
Yeah.
Or an idea that might be the thing. And you go to t-shirts. Is there like, you know, growing up, were you like a t-shirt dude? Were you a shoe guy? Was there any reason for you to go down that path?
Not really. I think my parents came from pretty poor upbringings. And when you look at, you know, immigrant families who come from poor upbringings, like how you dress is really important. Like dressing nice was always a big emphasis in my family.
Yep.
You know, we'd go to church on Sundays, yep, had to look good. We'd, yep, go to the family get-togethers, had to dress up. Looking nice and looking good was always a top priority. So I wasn't fashionable. Like my sisters and my mom like came shopping with me, clothes shopping till I was, you know, 25. But I was more drawn to clothing, how it was a representation of our own individual values. Mm. How we choose to dress ourselves is a conscious or subconscious decision on how we want to be perceived by others in this world.
Yep.
Right? Like you, both of us, we got dressed this morning and made a conscious decision of what we wanted to wear.
Yep.
Because it expresses some sort of our values that we want others to perceive, right? Yep. Whatever those values are. And I thought that clothing could be a way to bring people together who shared the same values, right? And that value for me was the love of Calgary, the love, and it started with different Calgary communities. I thought that was going to be the big ticket. I'll make a Marta Loop shirt. I'll make a Kensington shirt.
Yep.
Forest Lawn, you know.
Yep.
17th Ave.
Yep.
And so I thought that could really bring people together for the love of their communities.
Yep.
And so that's what I did.
So you launched this thing, $50.
$50.
You use the tech. It all makes a lot of sense. You launched this thing in the middle of your MBA or at the end of it?
Right in the middle.
So now you have this thing happening.
Yeah.
And you're going to school, living in a different country. What is it? What starts to happen? You know, does the business start to thrive? And you're like, shit, I'm too busy. It's getting too big. I got to finish my school. Or like, where's your head starting to wander?
It was, so my best friend, he put the first order in. I was like, yo, can I just pay you?
What
you
year
just
was
test
this?
It out. 2015.
Okay.
I was like, can I just pay you? You just test this out. So he ordered it. It's great. I was like, hey, look, Dad, look what I made. Isn't this neat? So he ordered a shirt because he felt bad. And then I was like putting it out there on social media. I was trying to get it out there on Twitter, Reddit, you know, anywhere I could throw it out there.
Yep.
And then one person bought and he was a complete stranger. Mm. Complete stranger. Mm. And I was like, once I had that feeling, I was completely addicted to that feeling.
What was it? Can you explain it?
What was it?
That feeling.
Oh, that feeling.
Yeah.
The closest thing I can relate it to is in basketball when you, like, growing up, you always want to be able to dunk the basketball.
Yeah.
That's like the dream. Mm-hmm. And I've only been able to dunk it like a few times in my life.
Yep.
Never in game or anything. But like when you can finally dunk on a proper net, it's just like all this hard work and you go up and you try, but you finally do it. And it's just, you feel on top of the world. It's just a rush. And you get this feeling in your gut that you're just like the best.
Yep.
And it was like a drug. And Shopify's so good because they have it set up on your phone.
Anytime you built it on Shopify?
Yeah.
Back then too.
You know why? Because when I Googled it, that was the YouTube video that came up.
Fucking Google, hey?
It's like, Shopify, here's how to build your own t-shirt
Which
company.
Is brilliant, right? Because Shopify, are you still on Shopify?
Oh yeah.
It's like it is the thing.
It is the thing.
For any e-commerce play.
And they made it so easy for people like me. They step by step. It's a 30-minute video. They're like, this is how you get a domain.
Yep.
This is how you sync up to the drop shipping. This is how you create your designs, blah, blah, blah. So I just like follow the steps.
System.
Follow the system. It was paint by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, that was easy.
Mm.
Like, I wonder what else I could do. Mm-hmm. And then around the same time, I wanted to run a marathon.
Okay. Where's this idea come from?
Dude, I'm all over the place.
Dude, this is why it's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
Because I think for me to actually hear an authentic story, there's so much more depth to it.
Yeah.
It's way more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I hope on the flip side, you're like, fuck, I can't believe I get to like go down all these crazy paths.
So, I'm loving
so
this.
Do not hesitate.
I appreciate it. Thank you for, indulging me because, this is a blast. But I wanted to run a marathon because I'm 6'3". I'm a big boy.
Yep.
My mom is a renowned runner. She's fantastic. She's run Boston lots of times, but she's not a traditional runner, right? Never trained, never anything. She just took up running in her 40s and was absolutely phenomenal.
Wow.
So I always wanted to run, to show to my mom, like, we're not built like runners, but we can run, So I started training and it was there. I wanted something to do while I was in Sweden that I couldn't afford to go to the gym. Sweden was so expensive. We had no money. So I couldn't afford a gym. I wanted something that I could stay in shape and see. So I decided to run a marathon and I didn't want to tell anyone that I was running a marathon because there's nothing like if I told my friends, my family, they'd be like, Connor, you can't run a marathon. Come on.
Dude, look at the mirror, man.
Yeah. Look at the size.
It's just a big boy.
They're like, you're in the Clydesdale category of horses.
Like, you're dragging people.
Yeah. What do you make? So I was like, I'm not going to tell anyone I'm going to run a marathon. I'm going to tell people I ran a marathon.
Cool.
So I did it in secret and I didn't tell anyone until after the day where I posted the photo.
No way.
I'm like, hey, I ran my first marathon.
Where was it? Over in Sweden?
In Greece.
No, in Greece.
Thessaloniki.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I was like, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to go to Greece. I'm going to run a marathon there.
Mm.
And I'm going to show people.
How long did you train for?
6 months.
And did you like Google how to train for a marathon?
Yep. Google search.
Dude, I'm picking up a pattern here.
Yeah. Yeah. Never ran before to running a marathon program. Hmm. Follow the program step by step, number. And I'll never forget the first time, because I used to look at my mom and aunt, she'd be like, yeah, I had to do like 27 kilometer run today, or yep. I did a half marathon. I'm like, that, like those numbers were just infathomable. I could barely run for like 10 minutes straight. So the idea of like running for that extended period of time was unimaginable. And I'll never forget the feeling when I first ran 20 kilometers. It was a practice run.
That's a big number.
It's a massive number.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not zipping through this. Yeah. This is a slog fest. This is a bar fight with myself to get through this. And I'm sore. I'm basically injuring myself. But I did it. And I did, I remember the first time I did 20 kilometers. And I was like, I just ran 20 kilometers. Mm-hmm. And then something clicked. And I was like, there is nothing in this world that I can't do. There is nothing in this world that I can't do. And so you combine that with the feeling that I got from the little notifications. And then one other thing that was really powerful was while I was in Sweden, I gave up drinking. I just was so done with drink. I drank a lot in university, drank a lot while I was working in oil and gas. And in Sweden, I was like, you know what? I'm done. I don't need it. Hey, it was so expensive over there. I couldn't afford it.
Yep.
But I was tired of being hungover. Mm-hmm. I was tired of doing stupid things or not remembering the night before. Like, I was tired of Friday night coming and being irate if I didn't have a beer in my hand, right? Because that's what I thought was fun, and that's what I thought living was just getting drunk.
Yep.
So you take the combination of these three things.
There's a lot of, those are like, they're all big things though, hey? Like they're
massive, yeah. And it's an interesting thing because I was 25 at the time. And right around that time, there's a lot of studies, 25, 26, 27, even all the way up to 29, is a very special time in a person's life when they decide whether they're going to grow up or they're going to stay a child forever. That's why you have the famous 27 Club, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, Alicia, another singer there. But Kurt Cobain, all these people, the reason they died at 27, right, it was all drug overdose and everything. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to become an adult. They didn't want to take responsibility. They wanted to stay in that childlike state and just party and live the dream of, not being an adult ever.
Yep.
It's the Peter Pan syndrome, right? And so I didn't realize this then, but I realize this then. Now, I turned 25 and I was like, I want to go to the next level. I want to be an adult. I'm going to leave all these childish things behind.
And that was like a conscious thought.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I couldn't have done that. 25 is a young age, right? 25 is still like, we think we're old. We think we know a lot of things, but really, you look back on that time and you're like, fuck, we were young.
Yeah.
But to actually have that thought, like you've told the story before.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people have heard that statement. People are like, wow, it's so different? Or do you know people that actually like said similar statements to themselves?
Yeah, I think in one way or another, either, maybe it wasn't a statement out loud or it was just a decision that they made or a life event happened or something like that.
Yeah.
We all make, I'm sure you could look back and you can find a time in your life where you decided to make a conscious effort. And it doesn't have to be 25. It could be sometimes even 35, where it's just like, I'm done.
Yep.
That's not me anymore. I'm whatever. And so it was like this epiphany where I was like, there's nothing I can't do. And that's when I stopped caring what other people thought. That's when I stopped being afraid. That's when I had stopped having shame or fear or anything. And I was just like, let's go.
Yep.
Let's do this.
So now what happens? So once you have this epiphany and you got all like, you're moving in a very interesting direction. There's some big changes happening.
I became addicted to growing this business, just throwing it out on social, seeing what works, seeing what designs hit, seeing what sold well, what people liked, what people didn't like.
Yep.
And then I became obsessed with meeting other people who were into the same things I was. Mm. Most 25-year-olds, they just want to meet other people and go drink and party and meet girls and that kind of thing.
Yep.
I was settling down with my wife, my girlfriend at the time, was getting serious. I wasn't going out didn't want to meet new girls. I didn't want to like party. Yep. I want to meet other people who are just as passionate about something. Mm-hmm. And I want to connect and see how we could help each other. And so it just, you know, I just went all in, and every project for my MBA program, every paper, every assignment was just honed in.
You built it
on the business. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, it's not like we were selling thousands of dollars and wasn't blowing up, but it was enough. I'd get a sale a week, you know?
It's that basic though, right?
Yeah.
People need to, and this goes back to our early conversation about just seeing the highlights.
Yeah.
You know, people see where you are today.
Yeah.
And they probably don't understand the numbers behind it and the rest of it, but it started somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's literally one sale a week. You're like, this is awesome. I got something here, right? Like it's a...
That adrenaline hit from that one sale would carry me for a week. Mm-hmm. I would chase that next sale. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it wouldn't happen for another month. Mm-hmm. There was months I'd sell one t-shirt.
But it's that... That was the beginning though, right?
Yeah.
That's like the... That's how it started.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for people... Again, back to this highlight idea, people see the end results. What they don't understand is the time it took to get to where they are today.
Right.
And I think that's the conversation that doesn't really get had that often.
Yeah.
Whether there's patience, whether it's like understanding you're in it for the long term, like figuring out how do you make choices that you can actually wait for this thing to play out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think these, back to the highlight thing, I think it's just, yeah, nobody really knows that. To hear that you're jazzed for a month because of one sale.
Yeah.
You can see youngsters running around being like, fuck, I've had 25 this week. And now I'm like, you know, I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm not selling 10,000 this first week.
It's, we live in a generation of now. We want everything now. You want to watch TV, Netflix. You want to go somewhere, Uber. You hungry, skip the dishes. You want a date, go on Tinder. We can get everything now. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of like, oh, we have to wait for something. We have to build something, especially on younger generations. Mm-hmm. Like it's not easy. Yeah. And so a lot of people think that they're failures. They're like, man, I'm not at a million followers, or I'm not at, you know, 1,000 shirts, like I'll just give up, on to the next.
Yep.
But it wasn't that way for me. I was like, I'm going to build this thing long. I'm going to build this way slow.
Yep.
I'm going to build a foundation.
Yep.
I'm going to have some fun with it.
So what happens? You finish your MBA over there.
Yeah.
Business is going.
It's going.
It's there. It's working.
It's there. It's a side hustle, right? It's fun.
Yep.
You know, it was something that I would work on the evenings and weekends.
The one thing I wanted to ask you is, where's all the designs coming from?
I'm no designer.
I haven't heard any like creative thing yet. So I was just like, where are these guys? Like,
you want to know where the very first designs came from?
Don't say Google.
Close. You're going to hate this as a marketing guy, but
no, man. It's like.
I found a website called Hipster Logo Generator.
No way.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And it was like a drag and drop. It was like an early form of Canva.
Yeah.
And it was like, drag and drop, make these cool hipster looking logos.
Yep.
Download them, $5.
Crazy.
So I was like, done.
Crazy.
So I made a bunch of designs.
Yep.
A bunch just that way. And those were my first, like, those were all my community designs.
Crazy.
And then, you know, we started hiring real designers. Yeah, yeah. But
that's how it, when you start something, that's, you know, if you don't have all the skills, you got to figure out a cost effective way to pull this off.
I found designers, but they were like $250 a design. And I'm like, man, I can't afford that.
Thanks, but
that was the $50 was I bought 10 designs. That was the only cost to starting the business. Shopify had a free trial for 30 days, right? Mm-hmm. The only cost was the designs. Mm-hmm. So about 10 designs.
Crazy. Brilliant. So you finish.
And
then what?
Came back. I got a job.
Yep.
Because it wasn't making enough money.
Oil and gas job?
No.
Okay.
I was like, I'm not going back there.
Okay.
I was like, I'm never going back there. So I wanted to find something different. I wanted something that I was passionate about, that you know, would allow me to sink my teeth into, right? That kind of thing. And so I started working in tech.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For who?
Benevity.
No way.
Yeah. Crazy. I found a job there. Yeah.
What department what was the gig?
Okay, so it's kind of a funny story.
This is a theme with you.
Because I came back and I thought, I got this shiny MBA. It's not from Calgary. It's not from the States. It's from Sweden.
Yeah, okay.
Everyone's going to line up.
Yep.
No one's going to look that it was some little rinky-dink school in Sweden. Mm-hmm. They're just going to see MBA Sweden.
International MBA.
Oh, my goodness. Connor, come on in. You name the salary.
We've been waiting.
Yeah, we've been waiting. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find a job. couldn't find a job. So I was like, I got to get a job, living in my parents' basement. So I went on LinkedIn. I found this company, Benevity. I liked that it was tech. It was cool. It was early. You know, but they were established. They had money. It wasn't like, I think there was 100, 150 people there at the time. So I was like, this would be cool. They can wear whatever they want to work. It's not soulless like the oil and gas. And again, I don't want to paint oil and gas.
No, it's just, it's an experience that you had.
Yeah, because we're very, oil and gas is very supportive of us. Yep. That's what built my parents' business. Yep. You know,
it's all of it.
I'm very pro energy.
It's all of it.
It wasn't me.
No,
it wasn't for me.
And I can echo your story. My first jobs downtown were like, you know, in those towers working for energy companies. I got shitty khakis on, oversized golf shirts.
Yeah,
sitting in cubes, sucking my soul. Like, that's why we can make fun of it. We can dig at those.
Yeah. And again, like that works for some people,
dude. I'm actually jealous of those people because they spend zero time trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah.
You know, what's missing or what the opportunity is. They're like, no, I'm here. I'm good.
And then they go home, they enjoy their weekends.
That's comforting.
They love their lives.
Yep.
It wasn't for me. So I want to make that clear.
Ditto. Yeah, I feel the exact same way.
Okay, good. Because I'm very pro Canadian energy. So I was like, I want to work for this tech company. And so I applied. And then I was like, I got to make sure I get in there. So I looked on LinkedIn and I'm like, I got to find someone who works there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find anyone. But then I went scouring person by person by person. And I found out one woman who worked in HR, my best friend's mom went to high school with her.
Wow, you're stretching.
So I called my best friend and I was like, can I have your mom's number? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I called his mom and I was like, hey, do you remember this woman that you went to high school with? Says you're connected on LinkedIn. Can you reach out to her and say I gotta apply for a job? She's like, sure, okay. She puts in a good word for me. Then all of a sudden I got an interview. And I was able to charm my way through the interview and got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a client success representative, basically answering phones and service request tickets.
Yep.
And I was like, get me in anywhere, just I'll work my way up from the top, you know, no problem. So I get in there and like after like 2 weeks, I'm like, oh, this is kind of boring. This is not for me. I don't know if I like this. And then I was like, where's all the fun stuff happening? Obviously, like not tech inclined, right? Not creative. But the sales guys would always come in and they seemed like a wild group. And I was like, how do you become one of those guys? And they're like, well, you need sales experience. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have any of that. And then I was like, oh, but they probably need support. Like they probably need help with like presentations and stuff and doing whatever. And I was like, I could probably do that. So I was in the client service position for a month before I convinced everyone else to hire me and let me work with all the sales guys. I used to go in and I don't know if I have the courage to do this now. I used to go in at least once a week. I made a point of going in once a week to the CEO's office. I spent all week coming up with questions to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just walk in and knock on the door and be like, hey, why are we doing it like this? Like, is this what I'm trying to figure this out? And blah, blah. And it got to the point where he was like, look, you can't just come in here and ask me questions. Like, I'm doing work here. Like,
it's open door, but it's not weekly.
It's not open door. And I remember everyone thought I was crazy. Because
you didn't give it any thought. You're just like, okay.
I had no shame.
Yeah.
I didn't care. I knew that, like, if they fire me, like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay now
because
I'm growing this thing on the side.
Yep.
I can do, like, I got nothing to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And all these people would look at me, like, they'd see me every week going to the CEO's office and they're like, just walking in there. And this guy, this CEO, great guy, Brian DeLottenville, he's like 5'6". He's this tiny guy, scariest guy I've ever met. He's just so intense, incredibly smart business person.
Mm.
And like, I don't know if today I would walk into his office and ask him questions out of the blue, but back then I didn't care. I did not care.
Crazy.
So I was there, client service for about a month.
Yep.
Then I created my own job. The best part about this job was that all my bosses were all in the States. They're all sales guys in the States. So I had no one in the office that I had to be accountable to.
Bossing you.
Yeah. Right?
Yep.
So I could do my own thing. So, I mean, never really said this before, but I could like work on my clothing company at work.
Yeah.
Because people just see me and I'm like, hey, just I'm on a client call, guys. Just going to book this room.
Hammer.
They didn't know.
You just know? The way it works.
Yeah, I did. Like, I wasn't the worst at my job. I wasn't the best.
Yep.
I wasn't going above and beyond.
Because you weren't into it? Like, it just wasn't like you just knew.
It was a fantastic company, yep. Fantastic mission. But I knew that it was only a matter of time before I wanted it. The dream was to get this business
yep.
off the ground.
Yep.
And that would be my full-time thing. I knew because I'd never want to get laid off again. I'd never be fired again. I was like, I'm only here for a certain amount of time.
Yep.
So I'm not going to go above and beyond.
Yep.
I'm not going to be the rock star. I know I could.
Yep. Because it's in you. It's just how you...
Yeah, but yeah. I only have so much time to dedicate. I only have so much to myself. And I'm like, so I'm going to give the bare minimum.
Which, it's just the reality though, right? Like, it's...
But you know what? I knew how to connect with people.
Yep.
I really loved the people there. I started this club called Tea at Three. Cool. Every day, there's a thing in Sweden called Fika. Every day you had like caffeine and coffee and yep. cookies. And so I didn't drink coffee, but I made tea, so I'd make a big pot of tea and I'd go around like, hey, you want a cup of tea? 3 o'clock? Tea at three?
Oh, you're a different animal, eh? Right? Because I could just like, you could picture this, right? You know where the Benamity building is and you can see this like cruising down the office, talk to the CEO, you give him a tea, like it's a different thing you got going on.
Yeah. Hey, how are you? Talking to everyone.
Yeah.
So it's like, they all love me. They weren't going to get rid of me.
Yeah.
I had a couple of, you know, strongly worded performance reviews eventually, but by then I was just like, I don't care. I'm not going to be here for long.
Yeah.
So, and then there was a colleague at Benevity who introduced me to my business partner. So he went to school with him and he's like, hey, my friend works part-time in a print shop here. You should talk to him. You do shirts. He does shirts. Maybe you can work together. And I'm still printing everything off the on demand, getting a ship from LA to here.
Yep.
So I meet with him. It didn't work with the company he was working with. He's like, yeah, we're not really set up for drop shipping.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, but I love what you're doing. I'd love to get involved. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Because at this point, like, I was working full time, you know, getting serious with my girlfriend, and I only had so much time to dedicate to the business, and stuff was getting dropped. And I was like, I need some help.
Yep.
So I was like, I'd love to have you on, but coming from the contracts world, right? I was like, I'm not gonna let anyone in. Mm-hmm. We're gonna date before we get married.
Yep.
So I was like, we're gonna have a 3-month trial period. I'm gonna drop a contract. This is what you'll be in charge of. This is what I'll be in charge of. And after 3 months, see if we like working together, and then we can chat. So we did that for 3 months. He was incredible. He had all the skill sets that I lacked. You know, he was a finance. He knew numbers.
Yep.
He knew money. He knew operations, logistics, and it worked out. It worked out great. And after 3 months, I was like, "This is great. I think we can do something here." He's like, "Yeah, we could definitely do something." Brought him on as a partner.
Yep.
And then you know, every weekend we were going out. Creating content for Instagram, doing photo shoots with bloggers, coffee shops, athletes, giving out gear, you know. And then eventually stores started to reach out and say, we'd love to carry you. Luke's Drug Mart was the first store, you know, and then other little stores. And so we started to carry inventory and then getting into all these stores. And then it was the Benevity. They'd sent me to Vegas a week before my wedding. This trade show that they forgot that they were doing. And they're like, we need a sales guy to go. Well, sales guys are busy. So they're like, Connor, you're going to Vegas.
Helper guy, you're going.
Yeah, helper guy, yeah. And it was there in Vegas. And Vegas by yourself is the loneliest place in the world.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I hated it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm here a week before my wedding. I have so much stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here because the job told me to here. And I called Dustin. I was like, I got to go full time with this gig. And the whole time, I'm jumping around here a little bit, but the whole time we'd never taken a penny out of the company.
Mm.
Every single dollar we earned went right back in the company.
Doing what? Like, you know, coming up with enough promo material to give away or buying hiring inventory? Not photographers, not anything weird like that. It's just straight inventory.
Just inventory to fulfill like the needs of the stores, right? And then marketing expenses. But yeah, we're so lean, so frugal. But it all went back in the inventory, because stores were ordering, but they had net 30 terms,
and
that was a whole learning experience, right? So I had to find cash but we'd only ever put $1,000 in the business. So Dustin, when he came on board, we both put $1,000 each in the business to get our first selection of hats. That was the only part of drop shipping that we couldn't do. Mm-hmm. It's hats. So we $1,000 each to do hats. And we've never had to put a single penny into the business since, ever.
Isn't that crazy to say?
It's wild. Yeah. It's wild. It's a customer funded business. It's a community funded business. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm very proud of because a lot of companies, I think there's a lot of misconception in business. You have a great idea, then you got to go raise a bunch of money. You got to scale. Yeah. You know, you got to get to that next stage. Where us, we're like, what's the rush?
Yeah.
Let's build a great brand. Let's tell a great story. Mm-hmm. And then we'll grow at our own pace.
Yeah.
We're not looking to sell this in 5 years and retire with millions in the bank.
Yeah.
Because then what would we do? Mm-hmm. We'd want to go start another business that we could have fun with. And it's like, well, we already have that.
Mm-hmm.
So everything just went back into the business from day one.
So that when you decided, you know, you make that phone call, you're like, dude, I need out.
I need out.
Like, this is going to be my full-time thing?
Yeah, I need a plan. Like, I never wanted to volunteer for the business either. Mm-hmm. Like with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, she's like, if you're going full time, like you got to pay yourself a salary, like the same salary you were getting paid at Benevity.
Mm-hmm.
So met with our accountant, mapped it out. So we need to be making this much per month in order to get there.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's do it.
Did that, you know, once you see the numbers and you realize what the volume is, you know, are you getting freaked out? You're like, no, we got this.
Yeah,
because I'm sure the numbers were different, right?
Yeah. Oh, there was. It seemed like a lot back then, but I'm like, yeah, we'll do that. We'll figure it out.
Just blind confidence, trust, or just you had enough data, you had enough sales that you're like, no, we can. If I give all of this, it can increase by X.
It's a healthy combination of all three.
Yeah,
I'm an eternal optimist. Mm. I'll never. There's nothing that you can tell me that we can't do.
Mm.
Right? Or Dustin, he's a little bit more pessimistic. He's more of a realist than I am.
Yep.
He looks, he's like, that's a big number. I'm like, I will figure it out. It's only money.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm the sales guy, so I'm in charge of growing that top line revenue. Mm-hmm. So I was confident and said, like, if we can make this consistently by X date, then we'll go with it. And we did.
Mm.
So then I remember handing in my notice to the company.
Yep.
And that was one of the scariest things ever because you feel like you're top dog. You're like, can't wait to see you in this meeting later on. I'm going to drop a bomb on you that you like didn't see coming. Yeah. Oh man, it's going to blow you away. And then you tell them, you're like, yeah, I'm going to hand in my 2 weeks notice because I'm going full time in my business. Mm-hmm. And you walk out of that meeting, you're like, did I do the right thing?
Like an internal debate.
Because once the toothpaste is out, you can't put the toothpaste back. You can't go back and be like, oh, by the way, just kidding. Just kidding. You know, like what if this doesn't work out? Mm-hmm. What if I can't make those numbers? Yeah. What if like, am I losing a great opportunity at a growing company? Benevity was doing really well. Mm-hmm. All signs were pointing towards good things.
Yep.
I don't know. I just got married and we want to buy a house. Is this really dumb? But then it's just like, nah.
It was time.
It's time. We'll figure it out.
And how many years ago was that full time?
That was 2017.
17.
So I left at the end of 2017.
So in the last, what is that, 3, 5, 6? 6 years?
Yeah.
6 years full time doing your thing. Are you surprised where you are? Is there like an optimistic person? Could you have even guessed of where it would be today?
No. Never.
Why is that? So as soon as you said an optimistic person, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm sure you had like big visions and you had ideas of how to scale it and what this thing could be.
Yeah.
And where it is today, you're like, no, I never could have seen it.
It's a weird thing. I don't think I ever could have foreseen how happy and satisfied I was going to be.
Mm.
Like right now, I'm the happiest person you'll ever meet. If everything were to shut down tomorrow and Local Army was no more, if I were to die tomorrow, I'd die a happy man. I have everything I could ever want.
Mm.
I have a business that I started that's super fun that no one else owns. There's no investors, no one telling me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I get paid a decent salary, right? And paying myself, it's not making that oil and gas money, not making six figures. I drive a 12-year-old car, you know?
Dude, I love that you're being candid.
Yeah.
Because it's important, right?
It is.
Again, people see the highlight.
Yeah.
People see, you know, you guys win awards, you do these things. But people have to actually understand like what it actually is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a millionaire. We don't live in a fancy house. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm not living paycheck to paycheck, but you know, I'm not, I still work a ton, you know, I still work 50, 60 hours a week on the business and that kind of thing.
P.S. There's that, right?
There's that, but I love it. It's mine.
Yeah.
It's ours, you know, we can do whatever we want with it. We want to go this way, we go this way. We want to go that way, we go that way. Mm-hmm. Like in 2017, we made the decision to switch to entirely Canadian made. And everyone at the time was like, you are out of your mind. You know how expensive that is? Mm-hmm. People, no one's going to pay that much for a sweater. Mm-hmm. You'll be out of business in 6 months. Our production team was telling us this. Mm. They're like, come out with a Canadian-made collection.
Yep.
This sweater's made in Canada. And I'm like, no, we got to do everything. Well, you were getting questions that we're called local laundry, but our stuff is made in Bangladesh.
Yeah.
We're pitching about supporting local and building local community, but our stuff, we're getting hats from China. Mm-hmm. I'm like,
just couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I was like, everyone else is making their stuff overseas. That's why we have to make stuff here, because no one else is doing it.
Yeah.
We got into big stores like Below the Belt and Sporting Life, and this was great. We're getting these massive orders, but we saw like all the clothes, what our stuff was beside. And I was like, this is all the same stuff from overseas. It's going to be a race to the bottom. Who can produce it for cheaper and cheaper?
Can you explain that? The race to the bottom, and can you explain it in a way? So the reason I'm on you on this one is because the race to the bottom, when you're building a brand, you have two options. Mm-hmm. A race to the bottom, or build a brand.
Yeah.
So I'd just dig into that a little bit.
Well, that's what I noticed. I was like, we're beside these really big brands with a ton of money and a ton of investors and hundreds of people at their disposal. We're two people.
Yeah.
How are we going to stand out? How are we going to be different?
Yeah.
And if we try to compete with them on price, they're going to crush us. Mm-hmm. They have economies of scale. They have contracts. They have relationships. We're never going to compete with them.
Yeah.
And so it's either we just become a brand that has to constantly come out with cool, cool designs and we have to constantly continue to try to be cool because we got this one cool design, the YYC design. That was cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, what if one day people wake up and that design is no longer cool?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So who knows? Mm-hmm. So our clothes have to stand completely on their own. We have to differentiate ourselves completely from the other companies and do something that they would never do.
Yep.
They can't go made in Canada. The big boys can't go made in Canada because the damage is already done. They've grown fat off those healthy margins of overseas production, right?
Yep.
So now instead of competing with them on price, we're going the other way. We're competing with them on story. We're competing with them on brand. And now we're so differentiated from everyone else.
Is it, that's a big decision, right? You had the choice to continue to go down the path of like cost-effective products, or you decide to like build a brand and kind of go and actually put your like flag in the ground. This is what we do.
Yeah.
That decision.
Yeah.
Did you knew which way it had to go?
I was like, we gotta draw a line in the sand. Say we're no longer gonna make stuff that's not overseas. That's not made in Canada.
Yeah.
No longer gonna support overseas manufacturing. Hmm. And that's gotta be our line. Mm-hmm. And our sweaters went from like $60 to $90 overnight.
Which is it's a big increase, right?
Massive. Yep. Are you kidding me? Massive. Calgary is a great city. There's lots of money in Calgary, but we don't spend money on fashion here.
Yep.
Calgary is a jeans and t-shirt kind of city, right? And that's what makes Calgary great. So like you could charge $90 for a sweater in Vancouver, Toronto, no problem. Calgary?
Yep. It's a push.
It's a push, right?
Yeah.
But thankfully, we had customers who were just like, they were along for the ride. They were like, absolutely, this is something we've wanted. Thank you for doing this. We want to support Canadian-made manufacturing, all the economic benefits, the environmental benefits, the labor benefits, the human benefits. Mm-hmm. And they supported us. They're like, we'll gladly pay that much for Canadian-made clothing.
Awesome.
And so that was a huge, huge swing, and it paid off. Mm-hmm. And fast forward to the days of the pandemic, when people want to support local, you couldn't even get stuff from overseas.
Yep.
Well, we had the infrastructure, supply chain already built out. Mm-hmm. We were way to the races. Mm-hmm. There's no problem. We got it all set up already.
It's so interesting how like a big decision like that can actually get you on a path that feels right.
Yeah,
and then you're set up to handle certain situations, which.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary because you're like, is this the right move? Because no one else is doing this.
What am I missing here?
Yeah.
If nobody else, like, am I the only guy here that's thinking this? What's the?
Yeah, it's scary. But I just thought, we have to differentiate ourselves. Mm. How are we going to differentiate?
It's a perfect segue. How do you look at like 5-10 years out and see where this thing, where you want it to go, or how it's going to get there?
We do, but it's more just like a fun exercise.
Yep.
The world is changing day by day. The business, our business has fundamentally changed 8 times since we've been, 8 times or more since we started.
Yep.
Our biggest asset or skill is our adaptability and flexibility. We can change on a dime.
Mm-hmm.
We're nimble, we're organic, we're frugal. Mm-hmm. We don't have to answer to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at 5-10 years and it's fun to think of where we're going.
Yep.
But really what we started doing is just, we got to think in 90 days.
Cool.
We got to think where we want to be in 90 days, where we're going to be in a year. And anything beyond that, we don't know. You know what I mean? Because like think of the last 5 years that we've been in business, all the major economic, social impacts, like all these events, they really were massive events.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had to change our business from the ground up.
Yeah.
So, like tenfold over.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we have no, like, it's like we have no idea where we're going to be in 5-10 years. But I'm excited to find out.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't, and like I said, I'm so satisfied and happy and I'm so content with where I am in life right now that if 5-10 years from now, I just hope I'm just as content. I always look, you know, Dustin, he's a really smart guy and we're fantastic partners, but he's always looking at like, we got to get to this and this. And I always say like, we're going to look back in 30 years. We're going to be millionaires. We're going to have won all the awards you can win. You know, we're not going to work anymore. We're going to have the best clothing brand in the world. And we're going to look back and we're not going to actually enjoy that time. We're going to look back at these days when we were building this as the good old days. Remember that time? Mm-hmm. Remember that time we had that warehouse? Mm-hmm. We had no money. We had to, you know, we were scrounging.
Mm-hmm.
We were making designs on hipster logo generator. You know, remember that time? Like that's the times we're living in the good old days.
Yeah, which is cool. You can see that.
Yeah, so cherish it. Like enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, stuff happens with production or prints and everything. And it's don't get frustrated. Like who cares? Like we're going to look back in fondness of all this.
It's a cool perspective.
Yeah. So like I said, like I don't know where the business is going to go. It could go nowhere. I do hope that it does grow. Like we want to grow.
Yep.
I guess my biggest fear is 5 years, 10 years from now, when we're exactly where we are right now.
The fear can drive you though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just to innovate and push and be creative.
This year is a very interesting year because I feel like this year is the first year where it's, I don't want to say back to normal, but the world has changed so much. Mm-hmm. And as it pertains to us and, you know, we've gone through all the changes. We've made a ton of mistakes and now we can finally start to plan, start to get a little bit of stability, some predictability and start to actually develop a strategy that's not just, you know, let's see what the world's going to throw at us tomorrow. Proactive versus reactive. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly it. You know,
that's cool, man. This has been fascinating.
Yeah.
Your openness and just like candidness to like talk and like, it was a cool perspective.
Again,
you know, people get stuck on these highlights. So actually just to hear what it actually looks like to get something off the ground. Me as like a new business guy, 3 years in, it's cool to hear a story that's like, you know, you're doing all these little things on the side and it's like, and you're slowly building this out, which is refreshing. So,
well, I really appreciate it. I can say I've never been interviewed like this before. Thank you for indulging me because it's allowed me to kind of explore my path and what led me to here, you know, and, yeah, I've never had an interview like this.
I'm glad you can say that, and I'm not going to let you go yet. I end the show with one question.
Oh, okay.
When I say Calgary, where does your head go?
Oh.
P.S. I emailed you this, so I love you didn't read it, because now you're scrambling.
It's so bad. Yeah. when you say Calgary, it's going to sound so lame, but it really is. It's community. If you know me, if anyone knows me, that's... everyone will tell you that's my favorite word is community. But I look at Calgary and there's no greater sense of community than here. And you don't have to look any further than the small business owner community. If you're in Toronto, if you're in Vancouver, business owners don't want to help each other.
Yeah.
It's dog eat dog there, right? Mm-hmm. If they give you a piece of information, you might be worried they're going to use that against you, or it's going to come back to haunt you or whatever. Here, everyone's so open. This candidness is not just me. That's Calgary. You can go into almost any small business, talk to any small business owner. They'll be just as open.
Yeah.
The good, the bad, and the horribly, mm-hmm. horribly ugly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I think. It's community. It's people want to connect. Everyone. Are you from Calgary?
Born and raised.
Very few.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see a little bit more, but very few. Everyone knows what it's like to be the new kid at school here. Everyone knows what it's like to be from somewhere else, to have a different culture or different habits, and bring them together and start something new. But Calgary is also a very incredible place where if you work hard, good things can happen.
Yeah.
You know, hard work, you know, innovation, sheer determination is rewarded here like no other place,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what your last name is, what part of the city you live in. It's show me what you've done. What have you built, you know?
Yep.
What have you contributed,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that, it allows people like me to stand on my own two legs, to build something of my own, and that's what people judge me. That's what people judge my merit on.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what I think is really cool. So I say, you say Calgary, I say community.
Which it's a real answer. And you're not the first, like, you know, this is 68 in, right? And I asked the question to 68 people and that word community pops up, you know, it's whether it's like that entrepreneurial vibe or community or like, it's interesting to hear it.
Right?
Because everyone kind of talks about the same way.
You can look no further than this. I've never met you before.
No, man.
We don't know each other.
And this is the mind twist for some people. You know, yeah. People don't really understand how the show works and how it all happens, but there's literally an email that goes out. Yes, no, book a time. Okay, show up. Okay, I'm here and I'm going to sit down with these two cameras, lights, some random dude, and we're going to get into my life story.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting experience.
But even before, like off camera, or before we rolled, you're like, let me know whatever you need. Like I'll get it for you. Happy to help however I can.
Yep.
You know, there's no, you're just, you were willing to meet with a stranger, share his story, but then also help however you can. Like
yeah.
that's, it's not, you're a great guy, but it's not like, that's what everyone does here.
Yeah.
That's just what we do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the same in other cities.
I agree.
Nope. You know, it might be, but I haven't seen it.
No, nope. It makes sense.
So.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks again for having me. Sincerely, this was a blast.
Yeah, this was a cool one. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch what you guys pull off.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.